Well, good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru. I am determined to deliver something unto you today that will be of value. Had a lady meet me at the dealership this morning early, and she had a car that she wanted me to help her sell. She has listened to this show not very often. She always forgets about it. That's what she told me. But anyway, she listened enough to know that I'm probably the guy to come to when it comes to figuring out what to do with an old car. And she had an old car. It had been her mother's 1998 Mercedes SL500. That's a two-door convertible, has a removable hardtop. Pretty cool car. I started walking around the car looking at it, and she had said that it had had, you know, had some door dings and stuff like that, but overall was in really good shape. So I walked around the car. Immediately I see the paint on the door doesn't match. And then I roll up to the left front fender, and it looks a little fishy. See a little overspray on a piece of molding underneath the windshield. I raise the hood, and I see that where the radiator support had been replaced and very poorly painted. And then go around to the right front fender, and it had been painted as well. So then I addressed that with her. And, you know, of course, I always try to let people down easy, and I tell them, I'm not picking your car apart. Remember, I'm not trying to buy it. You've asked me to help you sell it. She said, I understand that, and I appreciate it. Tell me like it is. And I said, this car was in an accident of some kind. And she said, oh, yeah, okay, I forgot my mom got sideswiped in the car. Okay. Well, that's a little bit more than a Walmart door ding. Would you agree with that? So we start, I didn't say that to her. So we start going over the car and talking about the history. And I said, now this is a, you know, it's a car that would range in value on the low side, $15,000. On the high side in today's market, maybe $50,000. So it's a, I mean, it was a very expensive car. I think when it was new, it was like 89,000 when it was new in 1998. That's a lot of money in 1990. It's a lot of money now. So, but it's depreciated. And I said, what's going to hurt the value in this car, which only has 48,000 miles, is going to be the fact that it has been painted and, it was damaged and not done well. And she said, you know, I'm going to have to think about that a lot. I said, do you have any records? Do you have the estimate or anything? She said, I don't know. I don't think so. Here's all I've got. So she hands me a folder, and it's got a bunch of repair orders in it, but it doesn't have anything about any damage repair. So I said, it would really be beneficial if somebody was thinking about buying your car, just imagine if you could say, well, this was the damage that was done to it. You know, had the fender replaced or whatever. It makes people feel better about investing money in a car as long as they know. But if you just, somebody points out that the car's been wrecked, then you don't know how badly it was wrecked. And it gives you pause, right? So she's going to work on that. And, you know, it just made me think about my role in my advanced age right now. What can I do for people? What can I do to help in some way? And that was really the initial reason that I went into doing this radio show, was to be able to take something that I know a lot about and be able to share it and to use that information to help other people, help them prevent making a mistake when it came to their cars. Now, I can't reach everybody. There's not, you know, everybody doesn't listen to AM radio. So, you know, that's a limiting factor. You know, word of mouth only goes so far. I get a lot of phone calls, a lot of text messages. I've got a couple messages on my voicemail right now, people that I got to get back to that listen to the radio show and have questions about cars. They either want to sell something or, you know, thinking about buying something or whatever. And I love helping people with issues like that. But everybody needs an expert in their lives in different things. Like you know, for the last, I don't know, I've lived in my house for 27 years. I've never had a good-looking yard. I've always taken good care of it. I've always mowed it. I'm an expert when it comes to mowing and weed eating and stuff like that, but not growing good grass. I have a smorgasbord of weeds, a lot of different kinds of weeds. Well, my wife and I kind of got tired of it. She said, let's have grass this year. I said, okay. So I call Julio at the lawn doctor. And Julio comes and looks at my yard, and he says, well, the good news, Lenny, is that you do have some grass. We just need to add some to it and then fertilize it and treat it and so forth. So he did. You would be very impressed with my yard right now. I know it's just the beginning of spring, I think, and haven't had time for it to really develop. But my goodness, it's green, and there's grass growing everywhere, and mowing my yard is going to be fun. But I don't know anything about grass, growing grass. Julio did. You know, I'm not an expert on plumbing. I'm not an expert on electricity or farming, for that matter. But what I don't know everything there is to know about cars. You know, people say, well, surely Lenny could tear apart an engine. No. Well, I probably could, but I'd need some instruction probably. You don't have to be an expert in every little detail. You just have to know a lot about certain things that you can help people. So that's what I do on this show. I also love history of any kind, especially as it relates to cars. I love stories about cars. The cars that I find, the ones that I buy, I love the story on this K-Code Mustang that I purchased, 1966 Fastback, how it was ordered by a young man living in, what was it, Santa Rosa, California. It's just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. And it's funny, it was built just south of the San Francisco Bay in San Jose, and then delivered back at the Ford dealership there in Santa Rosa. And that Ford dealership is still in business today. It's called Hansel Ford. That kind of stuff is just interesting to me. You know, the story is just as interesting to me as the car. I'm glad I have the car, but I just love the background. I have some other vehicles that I don't know anything about, like this Porsche that I have. It's 05 911 Carrera S. It's had four different owners, and I've not run the people down. I'd like to know the story about that car. My 65 Corvair that I have, I know it came from Fall Branch, sold new in Kingsport, Tennessee. I know the man who bought it, the second owner. I don't know who the first owner was, but this kind of stuff that kind of turns me on. And I want to get into that a little bit about cars and cars in general, and I have want to give you my opinion on this electric revolution, if you care to hear it. Some of the challenges I think we're all going to face when it comes to the electric car, and how I just don't feel that the hype or that the reality matches up with the hype, and I'll get into that in just a minute. I am kind of a history buff in general. It all started with a man named Richard Dowdy. He was my history teacher at Greenville High School, and I was never really that interested in history. All through, I guess, elementary school and junior high school. That's what they called it when I was young. When I got to high school, I ran into a teacher who loved it. And he was able to transfer that love of history into very interesting stories that he would tell. You know, when Mr. Dowdy talked about Egypt, he had actually been there. He talked about seeing Alexander the Great's signature in a stone. He had, I guess, gotten a chisel or had somebody do it and chiseled his name in a stone, and he actually ran his fingers through that. But he would tell us stories about all the Sphinx and going through the Notre Dame Cathedral and through St. Peter's Basilica and all this stuff. I'd never seen those places, but he made it real to me. And he challenged my thinking as a person who really didn't care about history and turned me into a history buff of sorts. So I do wish I knew more about the people who own the cars that I own in my collection, so to speak, their interests, motivations, why they bought what they bought, when they bought it. None of that makes a lot of difference as far as value, but it does to me. You know, I was looking at a 1936 Mercury Zephyr. It was on sale on the Bring a Trailer auction the other day. It's something that I would really like to own if it had two less doors, but I would love to know who bought that car and the journey that those people took as they traveled through their lives in that car. It just, you know, I see the car, but there's a story behind that car. And I just like knowing it. But as I've been diving into all of my mom and dad's photos, and thank goodness they kept a lot of stuff, it just brings to mind all of those moments that we all have that are lost to time. I see so many photos of vacations and picnics and family reunions, and more often than not, there are cars in the background, including 57 Bel Airs and 67 Impalas and a 73 Caprice Estate wagon. I saw a picture with my brother's 72 Cheyenne pickup in the background, and all of the others. It just reminds me that automobiles represent so much more than just getting us where we need to go. They represent freedom, and they make our lifestyles possible. You know, I think we take so much for granted in this society, especially our freedom. You remember when the pandemic took our freedom away, or tried to. We quickly got tired of it, and we started to push back. When gas prices spike over and over again, we fuss and we fume, but we keep driving, don't we? You know, our freedom to travel, having that restricted goes against our grain as Americans. We will not be held down. You know, I guess that's in our blood, though. Our ancestors proved that when they came to this continent. I started to say country. It wasn't a country then. And I think that spirit lives in us. We just do not like to be held back. That's just the American spirit. So, you know, I'm glad to play a role in keeping folks moving in the car business. That's what we do. I love looking back on the history of the car business and how we once lived. But my nostalgic mindset does not keep me from recognizing the challenges that we face ahead. I mean, I read all of this stuff through automotive news and all the car magazines and the, you know, all of the industry publications. And, you know, it's all about the electric vehicle. You know, the government and a large part of the auto industry is totally enamored with the electric car. They really seem to think that it's the answer to all of our problems. And billions of dollars are being spent to make that the new reality. I was talking to the mayor of Greenville the other day. We were having lunch, and I go to Ingalls sometimes to get some semi-home cooking. And I look over, and there's Mayor Daniels sitting over there with a couple other of good friends of mine. So I just sat down with him, and we were just talking about electric cars. You know, anytime a car guy walks into the room, people say, "How's the car business?" You know, and they want to know what's going on. So I try to bring them up to speed a little bit. But we were talking about the new Blue Oval City, you know, that's being built out in West Tennessee. Now, if you haven't heard anything about it, Ford Motor Company has made a multi-billion-dollar commitment to a little community called Stanton, Tennessee, which is about 40 miles northeast of Memphis. And they're going to build a huge plant there that will, the plant itself will employ 5,700 people, but they say that it will generate a total of 27,000 jobs in West Tennessee, or in Tennessee in general, because of the all the supplier plants that will be built to support this massive F-150 plant. And yes, they're going to build Ford F-150 trucks there, but the difference is all those trucks will have electric motors and batteries. And there's also going to be a battery plant. I think they're partnering with a company called SK. I'm not sure what that sounds. I think it's a Korean company, but they're building this huge city called Blue Oval City. 7,000 acres, I think, is how much land they're acquiring to do this. So pretty big community, you could say. Now, I do understand that there are electric cars in our future. I am open to the possibility that it will be the dominant force in the auto industry. But there's something in me that says not so fast. I don't think we have any idea as a society how hard this is going to be. You know, the cost, the challenge to supply all of that extra power. What is the source of that power going to be? Where are we going to get a charge? Think about, you remember the blackouts that they used to have out in California to preserve electricity when it gets really hot and everybody's running their air conditioners? Imagine you take all of the internal combustion engines off the road and now everybody's having to charge their cars. What that's going to do to the power grid? And who is going to make all these batteries anyway? And where does all the stuff come from to make the batteries? I mean, there are precious metals that go into these batteries to make them work. A lot of that has to come from other countries. Some of it comes from Ukraine, as a matter of fact. You know, that's kind of scary. Keep in mind, though, this one thing. Batteries do not make electricity. They only store it, right? And if anyone thinks that electric cars are going to be cheaper as far as an alternative to internal combustion engines, they're kidding themselves, in my opinion. Once there are no more gas pumps and all we have are charging stations, how cheap do you think it will be to get a full charge on your way to the beach or even at your own home? When people are reliant on the electrical grid for their car's power, in addition to their heat and air conditioning in their houses, their lights, their computers, then who's going to be in control? Who's going to be in control of the pricing and the availability of electricity? Now, we have gone through some challenges over the last 40 years or so with the availability of gasoline. Remember the oil embargo in the 70s? I mean, it almost put my dad out of business. And then we had other oil scares over the years and the tremendous spikes that we've had due to, you know, trouble in the Mideast. But it was all pretty much a free market system based on availability, and the people who provided the gasoline to us were private companies, I'm sorry, companies that were owned by shareholders, not owned by the government, Exxon, you know, Phillips, whoever, name them. But now who's going to be in charge of the electricity that we get? Won't be private companies. It's not now. It's controlled by utilities, which are quasi-government agencies, and the government. And what does government like to do? Well, they like to tell you what to do, right? So, you know, this future scares me, this electric future for my children and grandchildren. It's not like I'm, you know, crawling into a corner closet and crying my eyes out. I mean, not that kind of fear. It just concerns me. And I have a weird suggestion coming from a car dealer who sells electric cars. Don't buy what they're trying to feed you. Don't buy a Tesla. Don't even buy a Mach-E Mustang that I sell or any other electric car unless you really have to. I mean, if it really makes sense for you, then, you know, you're free to, obviously free to do whatever you want to do, but don't buy into this idea that this is the only choice that we're going to have. Keep buying cars with gas and diesel engines. Doing otherwise is giving up a whole lot more than greenhouse gases, in my opinion. You're giving up your freedom, and it's going to really change our life, not for the better. And that's my opinion. So I'll take my last break, and I'll be back here in just a second. My daughter and son-in-law, Audra, and Ben sold their house, and they're going to build a new house not too far from me. But in the meantime, they're living at my parents' house. And Otter was digging through a drawer one day, and she found this card that my dad used to carry around in his pocket. And obviously, he carried it around, or at least had it in his wallet, because it had all the birthdays of all his grandchildren written in his handwriting on the card. But on the card, it also said this: life's best motto. To live as though Christ died yesterday, arose this morning, and is coming back tomorrow. And then it had something that said, God's minute. And it says, I have only just a minute, only 60 seconds in it. Forced upon me, can't refuse it. Didn't seek it, didn't choose it. But it's up to me to use it. I must suffer if I abuse it. Just a tiny little minute, but eternity is in it. I thought that was great. You know, yesterday would have been my son's 39th birthday. And I think about that. His life on earth ended at the age of 27. And our life, our lives, my family, my immediate family, and my extended family has really never been the same since that loss. But we have, we chose to live on and to do what we could, take what we learned, and use it to serve others. Ever since that time, I have sought out people who have lost loved ones, especially when they come into the dealership and they mention it. I've had several different friends offer me some things to read that really helped me when I was at the early stages of grief. And I have purchased those books, and I keep them in my office. I order them from Amazon, and when I run out, I order more. And I pass those out to anybody who mentions that they lost somebody. Those are the kind of things that are the most important things in life, I believe, is how can we find ways to serve others, to love others, to share positive things with people and not just negative things. I know sometimes I can rant on a little bit, maybe throw some stuff out there that's somewhat controversial, but, you know, what I try to do more than anything is to witness to my belief in the Lord and also to belief in my fellow man. And any way that I can help them, help you navigate a small part of your life, which I call the car life, then that's what I'm put here to do. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and we'll see you tomorrow.